This is
the
Second
Story
Podcast.
Welcome back to the Second Story Podcast. I'm Max Spitz. This week, our episode is being released in the middle of Passover, the Jewish holiday that commemorates our liberation from slavery in Egypt. We begin the celebration of Passover with a ritual meal, the Seder, which happens to be the most commonly observed Jewish ritual in the world. Part of my own theory as to why that is that for the Seder, we're explicitly supposed to invite anyone we know who may not have a Seder of their own to attend. Effectively, we celebrate our freedom by strengthening our community and reaching out to those in need. In this week's story, teller LaTanya Lane shares a journey with faith of her own and how she found strength and support in the community she helped build. Recorded live at Haymarket Pub and Brewery in December 2023, Second Story is proud to present The Perfect Amount of Water.
I fell out of faith in a garden. It was a small plot in a community garden on 57th Street in Hyde Park. There were no forbidden fruits there, unless, of course, you were a rabbit and raspberries. Then you'd be chased off by one of the gardeners. I was not a rabbit. No. I was the mother of a toddler and was working through a divorce. My then husband was losing touch with reality. But if I'm being honest, our problems were bigger than his sanity. They were the problems of many marriages that fall apart. Problems of trust and vulnerability, problems of care. I was really interested in those kinds of problems as a seminary student. I would contemplate them while tending the small plot I'd seeded with tomatoes and cucumbers, spinach and lettuce, peppers and beans. Problems like, do rabbits pray? If so, is it about raspberries? Why is my marriage falling apart? Why do bad things happen to good people? Or at all? If there were a great loving God in the sky, then like, why this world? Why this world where what had been the big, beautiful yellow flowers of my cucumbers had wilted? The fuzzy leaves had become smooth, the edges curled and yellowing. What fruit there was seemed stunted. When I planted the garden, I wanted to feel connected to all the people in my family who had such green thumbs. Seeing this particular failure felt like the last straw. I grabbed a clump of soil as if the earth held an answer for me. Too much water, one of the more experienced gardeners told me. As I stood dumbfounded over the clotted earth in my hands, the roots rotted and undersized. It had really been too much loss for one season. Loss of freedom after becoming a parent. The loss of love's promise from the divorce. And now, the loss of my dang blasted cucumbers. What? Was I supposed to buy cucumbers from the store like some sort of not gardening idiot? Holding the rotted soil in my hands allowed me to access a cold fury. And the fury wasn't directed at my ex or at my child or even at the dang blasted cucumbers. It was directed at this idea of God that I had been given. This idea of a deity who's benevolent and kind and like totally cared about me. The evidence in my life and in my hands suggested otherwise. In that moment, my belief shifted. And I started to believe that God was more like water than the deity I'd been fed since I was a child. a child and a young person, I was devoutly religious. I believed so deeply and fully. I learned at an early age to silence the analytical part of myself. Like in middle school, my dad lost his job, an event he believed signaled his call to be an evangelist. As a child, I trusted this decision. I watched my dad go on what our family would begin to call faith trips. Trips where he would emphasize the difficulties of the trip so that the miraculous elements could be emphasized later. Like the faith trip where he traveled to Alabama, he had $50 in his pocket, a hole in his car radiator, and faith that the Lord would provide. Hallelujah. As he drove towards Alabama, he would call every time the car overheated, and I would imagine him standing alone by the side of the road, smoke curling out from under the hood of the car, other cars whizzing by. I was scared for his physical safety, but also scared about what kind of tests God might throw our way. Trials and tribulations were opportunities God gave us so our faith could grow. Would God make my dad's faith grow by letting him get hurt or taken advantage of? Would God let my faith grow by taking my dad away? This fear ate at me the entire time my dad was gone, and I was ashamed because it meant I didn't have faith. I shoved that fear under blankets of prayer and hope and shouted it out when my dad came back safe with his car fixed and enough money from love offerings to pay for the month's bills. There was the faith trip where he and my mom went to Roanoke, Virginia, a 5-hour journey from our home. I spent the weekend trying to be good and quiet and avoid the babysitter's attention. She was fine. She was just real short-tempered. The anxiety wound me up so much, and I was only able to relax when my parents got back. And I got to hear the ways God had provided gas money and food while I waited for them to return. During this period of my dad's career, I checked my skepticism at the door, even though it seemed to me that a traditional job provided more security. I trusted that the grown-ups must know better than me. God must have some plan. Someday, all of the anxious waiting, the financial suffering, the too small house where we didn't quite fit, someday all of that might make sense. What I learned during this period is that my dad likes to trust the Lord, likes to say the Lord will provide. Because I love my dad, I wanted to trust the Lord too. But standing in that garden plot on 57th Street, I realized I was done trusting. If God is like water, then God is low-key amoral, right? Able to give life and good things when present in the right proportions, hella destructive when there's too much. Think about it. The same water that sustains Beyonce also sustains Nickelback. Looking at how my overwatering had destroyed my cucumbers, my dad's commitment to God suddenly seemed to me like a commitment to water, the element of water, which struck me as an incomprehensible stance. Because if the choice is between me and an element, I know I am rooting for me. Let the water do it at once. Because if I'm being honest, it always felt like my dad was choosing his understanding of the divine over everything else. When I was putting this story together, I talked to my dad. We shared a few laughs about how out there some of his trips were. But you know, he told me, I felt like that was the best part of my ministry. The time when God was using me most. My dad is such a gentle soul. I still have not figured out how to let him know when I'm angry about his choices. It made me so mad that he felt like there was some miracle out there he had to find when we, his talented wife, his kind daughter, his brilliant son, and me, who's friggin' hilarious, we were all at home waiting for him. I was angry that he would be okay to inflict a little harm and endure a lot of suffering as long as it was in the Lord's name. As a child, I had trusted it. As a grown-up, it felt irresponsible to me for him to approach work this way. When we talked, I wanted him to tell me he wished he could do it differently or he would have made different, better choices. It frustrates me that he so breezily admits that he'd do it all again, but longer and with greater disregard for how it affected those around him. Those are my words, not his. I started thinking about my dad's faith trips 4 years into a job I loved. I was sitting in the executive director's office, my supervisor sitting in a chair beside me. Outside the window, the sky was clear and blue, and in the distance, I could see the lake, still and sparkling. A few months earlier, the org had gotten a call from a major funder that was essentially like, "Psych! We won't be giving you that money that you were expecting, our bad." Seriously, that our bad, we're so sorry. This call was about a lot of money. Having worked at a number of not-for-profits, though, I thought, well, that's sad, sure, but not unheard of. That was not everyone else's take. People were getting fired in upsetting ways. Ultimatums about justice commitments were being bandied about. And let's just say no one, not one single person, was being their best self. "We like you, and we hope you continue to work here," the ED was saying. Or that was the gist of it. When we left the meeting, my supervisor seemed relieved. "That couldn't have gone better," she said. Yeah, that seemed good. I didn't have a lot of words for how I was feeling. My mind had traveled to this faith trip our whole family had gone on with my dad to Tappahannock, Virginia. It was a night. The spirit was moving mightily. Bobby pins flew out of beehives, skirts jumped around ankles as people danced in the spirit. As my dad anointed people's foreheads with oil, many would crumple under his touch, the spirit too strong for them to even stand. There weren't enough modesty blankets, you know, the thin blankets you draped over the exposed legs of women's stands for, you know, modesty blankets, you know. There weren't enough of them to go around. We started to have to use coats. There are times in a holiness Pentecostal situation where the Spirit moves so mightily, you can just skip the sermon. And it seemed like we were getting close to one of those times. But no. My dad had come here to preach. "Please stand for the reading of God's word." My dad was preaching about the prophet Elisha and the widow woman, a story I still love. The widow woman comes to Elisha, asking him to help with her mounting debt. My dad, who sweats profusely when he preaches, dabbed at his forehead with a handkerchief and spoke into the microphone, whipping the cord around him to avoid tripping. "Here is a woman who is about to lose everything. She tells Elisha, 'The creditors are coming for my sons. What will I do?' She was focused on what she had lost, brothers and sisters. But let me tell you tonight that God is not worried about what you have lost. No, the miracle, your miracle, is in what you have left." As I walked back to my desk, I thought about that sentiment and my dad's whole approach to work. In the end, the widow woman creates an oil selling shop by pouring what seemed like a finite bit of oil into every container she could find in her home, and eventually every container she could borrow from her community. Her community gave her every spare pot they had until she could sell enough oil to pay her debts. And that is the main difference between me and my dad. He hears that story and is amazed at the unending supply of oil. I hear that story and I am blown away by that woman's community and the way they showed up and made sure her sons were not sold to creditors. Because if I'm being honest, I have seen miracles, and every single one of them were wrought by human hands. Strangers, friends, family, my dad. The miracle of my dad is his wide open heart, his hopefulness in such a harsh world. It scares me, it worries me, it frustrates me. It inspires me to try to crack my own heart open every once in a while, see what can get in and what I can let out. As things began to fall apart at work, I felt like that widow woman, pressed between unthinkable choices. I thought about my dad and wondered if in his example, I might not find a prophet, maybe a blessing. In my supervisor's office, I could feel my heart pounding in my chest as I told her it was time for me to leave. We talked timeline, which projects I was responsible for, what needed to be transferred to who, when. I left her office feeling like I had a plan for the next few weeks. I couldn't see much farther than that. As I was leaving, she stopped me to ask, "So what is your plan for after you leave? Do you have another job lined up?" "No," I said. I tried to think of what the next logical step would be. My mind was blank. "But you know," took a deep breath, "I'm trying to trust that something will work out." Last summer, I went to visit my parents in the house my miraculous siblings and I bought for them after I decided to leave that last job. Leaving had been the right choice. Opening my heart had been the right choice. My friends showed up with vessels for any oil I could muster, projects big and small, giving me opportunities to grow in ways I didn't realize I could. At my parents' new house, there's enough room for all of us to gather as a family inside. And in the backyard are fruit trees, and my mom has planted a garden with peppers and cucumbers, tomatoes and herbs. Sometimes I help my dad water the garden. Mostly, I stand beside him as he guides the hose over the earth and administers the perfect amount of water.
This story was produced by Jenna Myers, curated by Aimee Tin, and directed by Brandy Jimenez-Lee. Music and sound engineering was by Nathan Kistler. The Second Story podcast is produced by Max Spitz. To be the first to hear about updates and new episodes, sign up for our podcast listserv at 2ndstory.com/podcast or subscribe to the Second Story podcast on SoundCloud or Apple Podcasts. Second Story is located in the traditional homelands of the Council of the Three Fires, the Odawa, Ojibwe, and Potawatomi Nations. Our programming is made possible by the Arts Work Fund, Walter Foundation, Paul M. Angel Family Foundation, Gaylord and Dorothy Donnelly Foundation, Illinois Arts Council Agency, the Chicago Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events, Innovation 80, the Field Foundation, the Reva and David Logan Foundation, Modern Compassionate Care, Eric Rothstein and Gina Wamick, Athene Karras and Thomas Applegate, James Lupo, Jessica Wetmore, Hannah and George Stowe, and many generous individuals like you. I'm Max Spitz, and this
is
the
Second
Story
Podcast.